All Creatures Great and Small by James Herriot. Read by Nicholas Ralph. This omnibus edition comprises If Only They Could Talk, It Shouldn't Happen to a Vet, and three chapters from Let Sleeping Vets Lie. To Eddie Straton, with gratitude and affection, and Donald and Brian Sinclair, still my friends. All things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the Lord God made them all. Cecil Francis Alexander, 1818 to 1895. Chapter 1. They didn't say anything about this in the books, I thought, as the snow blew in through the gaping doorway and settled on my naked back. I lay face down on the cobbled floor in a pool of nameless muck, my arm deep inside the straining cow, my feet scrabbling for a toehold between the stones. I was stripped to the waist, and the snow mingled with the dirt and the dried blood on my body. I could see nothing outside the circle of flickering light thrown by the smoky oil lamp which the farmer held over me. No, there wasn't a word in the books about searching for your ropes and instruments in the shadows, about trying to keep clean in a half bucket of tepid water, about the cobbles digging into your chest, nor about the slow numbing of the arms, the creeping paralysis of the muscles as the fingers tried to work against the cow's powerful, expulsive efforts. There was no mention anywhere of the gradual exhaustion, the feeling of futility and the little, far-off voice of panic. My mind went back to that picture in the obstetrics book, a cow standing in the middle of a gleaming floor while a sleek veterinary surgeon in a spotless parturition overall inserted his arm to a polite distance. He was relaxed and smiling. The farmer and his helpers were smiling. Even the cow was smiling. There was no dirt or blood or sweat anywhere. That man in the picture had just finished an excellent lunch and had moved next door to do a bit of carving just for the sheer pleasure of it, as a kind of dessert. He hadn't crawled shivering from his bed at 2 o'clock in the morning and bumped over 12 miles of frozen snow, staring sleepily ahead till the lonely farm showed in the headlights. He hadn't climbed half a mile of white fellside to the doorless barn where his patient lay. I tried to wiggle my way an extra inch inside the cow. The calf's head was back and I was painfully pushing a thin, looped rope towards the lower jaw with my fingertips. All the time my arm was being squeezed between the calf and the bony pelvis. With every straining effort from the cow, the pressure became almost unbearable. Then she would relax, and I would push the rope another inch. I wondered how long I would be able to keep this up. If I didn't snare that jaw soon, I would never get the calf away. I groaned, set my teeth, and reached forward again. Another little flurry of snow blew in, and I could almost hear the flakes sizzling on my sweating back. There was sweat on my forehead too, and it trickled into my eyes as I pushed. There is always a time at a bad calving when you begin to wonder if you will ever win the battle. I had reached this stage. Little speeches began to flit through my brain. Perhaps it would be better to slaughter this cow. Her pelvis is so small and narrow, I can't see a calf coming through. Or, she's a good fat animal and really of the beef type, so don't you think it would pay you better to get the butcher? Or perhaps, this is a very bad presentation. In a roomy cow, it would be simple enough to bring the head round, but in this case, it is just about impossible. Of course, I could have delivered the calf by embryotomy, by passing a wire over the neck and sawing off the head. So many of these occasions ended with the floor strewn with heads, legs, heaps of intestines. There were thick textbooks devoted to the countless ways you could cut up a calf. But none of it was any good here, because this calf was alive. At my furthest stretch, I'd got my finger as far as the commissure of the mouth and had been startled by a twitch of the little creature's tongue. It was unexpected because calves in this position are usually dead, asphyxiated by the acute flexion of the neck and the pressure of the dam's powerful contractions. But this one had a spark of life in it, and if it came out, it would have to be in one piece. I went over to my bucket of water, cold now and bloody, and silently soaked my arms. Then I lay down again, feeling the cobbles harder than ever against my chest. I worked my toes between the stones, shook the sweat from my eyes, and for the 100th time